memoir appeared before his eyes, the pages marked with ribbons labeled Troop Management and Floor Design. "Congratulations! You have ascended to Floor Overseer on the Cruel Citadel Level 1. From the Overseer's throne, you may command and deploy mobs throughout the first level, create and alter the layout of the floor, and purchase resources or upgrades for the rooms." Fascinated, Rorik flipped through the pages. Under Troop Management, he found a roster of all the infernal creatures on the first floor, along with their statuses, and a simple map showing their current location. A few of the changelings and reaver bats who'd been killed when the salamander slaying heroes had returned for their griefing were marked as deceased slash respawning. Beside that was a small countdown clock displaying the time until they reappeared. The rest of the troops, however, seemed to be active, their dots roaming the map in prescribed routes. Rorik also found that he could alter the creature's scripts. The level one stone salamanders all seemed to be set to camouflage themselves and try to run away if a hero came within 15 feet. Rorik chose the salamander at the top of the list and erased the command to run, then wrote in a new one and accepted the changes. Now, if a hero came within 15 feet, the little beast would camouflage itself and attack the hero. It'd be interesting to see how that stone salamander's next encounter played out. He made a mental note to come back when he had redesigned the floor layout and changed the scripts for all the creatures on the first floor to something a bit more pragmatic. Somewhere in the back of his mind, Rorik registered cold, velvety flesh burrowing between his back and the throne. Macaroni's head pushed out under his right arm, and the creature's paddle-like tail curled around his left side. It wasn't fearsome, but it did make the unforgiving stone seat a bit more bearable. Rorik turned to the page marked Floor Design. At the top was a detailed map of the first floor's hallways and rooms, each door, chest, trap, and a bit of furniture carefully depicted. After a little tinkering, Rorik found he could move and change the corridors, placing new turns or removing them so that the hall ran straight. The first floor had 100 points to invest in different rooms and furnishings, each of which had a different point cost. By moving the points around and investing them in different places, he could add traps, hides, weapon racks, and utility rooms like kitchens, forges, infernal shrines, or arcane workshops. As long as he stayed within the allotted points, he could redesign the level to suit any purpose he wanted. Grinning like mad, Rorik studied the point distribution. This was exactly what he'd needed. With a forge and arcane workshop down here, he could set to work building weapons and armor for the trolls that would rival any the heroes brought in. Kaz's enormous, excitable heart would fail when he found out Rorik could put in a kitchen. But first, there was business to take care of. Reluctantly, he closed the Overseer's grimoire and stood. The Thursars all lowered their heads again, a few scraping their noses against the floor.
"All right, all of you get up," Rorik said.
He jerked his head at Kaz to lead the crowd. Kaz scrambled to his feet, the plumage on his antlered headdress dancing. A moment later, the rest of the throne room trolls followed suit.
"If you want to stay and fight, show me your loyalty by defeating our common enemy, the heroes. If you can't stomach me as a leader, you're welcome to leave the citadel or migrate to a lower floor. Either way, I don't want your contrived show of obeisance. I'm not going to execute you for thumbing your nose at me. At times I might even deserve it, but be advised, if you come after me, I will make an example of you."
Rorik let the open challenge hang in the air for a few moments before continuing.
"Those of you who are going, go."
He gestured toward the shadowy archway behind the throne that led down to the second floor.
"The rest of you, we've got raids to prepare for."
Conditions laid out, Rorik waited to see how many of the Thursars from Ugaraz's regime would leave. None did. Rorik nodded and clapped his hands together.
"Excellent. Let's get to work, then."
Chapter 22. Down, down, down. Rorik the Griefer's first order of business as floor overseer was to loot his predecessor. Ugaraz had quite a bit of gold on him. 210 pieces, but almost nothing else except the 5-tailed Lash of the Waning Blood Moon. Lash of the Waning Blood Moon. Damage 29 to 36. Range, 20 feet. Durability, 63 of 66. Level requirement, 4. Dexterity requirement, 16. Constitution requirement, 20. Whip class weapon, enchanted. When wielder's health drops below 25%, wielder goes into a blood rage, dealing 2x damage to opponents while taking 50% damage. That explained the pulsing red aura Ugaraz had erupted in. Rorik stored the whip in his inventory, then attempted to split the gold with Kaz and the Thursars. They were all staring at him. Meaty jaws hung open, showing rows of serrated teeth, and onyx eyes stared, horrified. Rorik sighed. Even you, Kaz? He thought because Ugaraz was a troll, not a hero, and Rorik had rightfully defeated him in single combat, the headdress-wearing Thursar wouldn't have a problem with looting the body. Well, less of a problem anyway. All right. Why don't you want a share of Ugaraz's loot?
Because it belongs to the Dungeon Lord,
a dusky voice said. The five Thursars turned as one, eyeing the corner of the throne room, just to the right of the dais. Rorik followed their line of sight to a level 6 female reaver with midnight blue skin, leaning casually against the arched stone doorway there, one foot propped up on the wall. Her face was hidden in the shadows of a dark hood, white ringlets spilling out from inside. The hood itself was attached to a scrap of leather bodice armor that concealed surprisingly little and would only protect her from opponents with exceptionally bad aim. Terribly impractical, or so it seemed to him. Rorik frowned.
I defeated Ugaraz in single combat. And that gives you the right to the floor overseer position,
the reaver replied coolly, kicking off from her perch and taking a few aimless steps toward the dais.
But the weapons, gold, and anything else the previous overseer had on him at the time of death belong to Dungeon Lord Azabek the Cruel. If Azabek wants you to have a piece of the action after that,
she shrugged and spread her hands.
Well, he'll decide how it's distributed.
Just one more way to make sure the whole citadel, from the first floor to the last, relied on its tyrant. I suppose you're here to collect, Rorik guessed. Both her forearms were wrapped from knuckle to elbow with leather strips. She fiddled with them as she answered.
You could say that.
From the tone of her voice, there was a smile somewhere inside that hood.
The Dungeon Lord has summoned you to the final level. You can bring an honor guard if you feel like it. And since you'll be down there already, you can make yourself useful and drop off his golden weapons.
There was less than 30 minutes left before Ponerboner 007 and his party respawned, and Rorik was eager to get to work redesigning the floor layout, not to mention get a forge up and running, but he got the feeling this wasn't an invitation he could decline. If I refuse? He asked. That time, Rorik caught a definite glint of tooth inside the hood. The reaver took a step backward into the shadows beside the door and crouched. Then she was gone, leaving nothing but a puff of black smoke behind. A moment later, a leather-wrapped hand landed on his shoulder and a warm bodice pressed against his back. Black smoke curled around his legs as the cold metal of a blade caressed his throat.
I don't know,
the reaver said, the smugness loud in his ear.
The smart trolls tend not to say no to me. I think it's my winning personality. That of the poison.
She held her palm out in front of his face, revealing a row of needles like tiny thorns sticking out of the leather wrappings. In the corner of his eye, his filigreed health vial flashed green. A notice appeared, just late enough to be completely useless. You have been poisoned. Initial damage, minus 20% health. Damage over time, minus 2 HP per second for 2 minutes. Drink an antidote to stop the effects. Rorik dismissed the alert and opened his inventory, going for the antidote he'd harvested off the griefed heroes. Naturally, it was gone.
Guess again, hot stuff.
The reaver stepped around him and headed for the arched doorway, waving a glowing green antidote potion over her shoulder.
You can have it back if you're good.
Outconned twice in less than an hour, Rorik scowled. Being a changeling must be killing his brain cells. Rorik jerked his head at Kaz. Let's go. The poisoned changeling and Thursar ducked through the doorway and onto a shadowy flight of stairs, lit at intervals by dancing torchlight. The soft slap of Macaroni's sticky feet followed them, and when Rorik looked up, he could see the telltale distortion slithering along the arched ceiling. On the landing below, the Reaver was waiting for them. By the time they caught up to her, Rorik's heart was thudding madly against his ribs, and his skin burned even though it was slick with cold sweat. "I'm not going to survive this staircase, let alone the entire citadel," he said, wiping a sheen of perspiration from his brow. "We're doing as you said. Give me the antidote and we'll keep following." She snorted.
"I saw your stash of modest healing potions, Griefer. You'll manage just fine."
Grudgingly, Rorik pulled one out and downed it. The sugary magenta swill took the edge off the poison, but his skin still burned like a hot iron. Most of his health flowed back into the filigreed vial, but it remained green rather than red, and continued to drain in slow, steady increments. They continued down the winding stairs and came out in a sprawling torture chamber that put Marikonik Ustar's nastiest prisons to shame. Cages lined the walls and hung from the ceiling, many covered in still wet gore, others containing grinning skeletons, many of them troll. Every device of torment imaginable, and a few unfathomable, were scattered around the room, interspersed with blood-soaked tables. At the far end, a cart full of dismembered and decaying body parts sat next to a raging furnace. Rorik couldn't hear Macaroni anymore, but he thought it likely the stone salamander was keeping watch from above. He hoped. Thursars milled around the room, and Reavers skulked in and out of the shadows like vengeful wraiths. Much like the changelings in the antechamber above, the trolls of the second floor seemed to spend all their time growling at one another or fighting over sloshing flagons of ale that smelled as if it had already gone skunky. As Rorik watched, a Reaver, this one with a glowing wand, sent an icy spike through the kidney of a level 6 Thursar. Two more Reavers and another Thursar pounced on the injured troll, taking it down like a pack of rabid wolves. As if he'd forgotten his newly evolved size and strength, Kaz skittered closer to Rorik. Rorik kept his rapier in hand, wishing he had more than just the spectral hands spell available for use. He'd seen similar scenes taking place across Traben in squalid stretches of city, where the populace had been strangled by the noose of poverty, crushed under the boot heel of the tyrant king until all humanity was bled out of them. They turned on the only people they could, each other.
"Nice place, this," he remarked, taking a long look around.
"If you like this, you're going to love level 3.
Their hooded guide said, leading them through a crumbling doorway at the back of the room.
"Things going that well under Azabek's reign, then?"
Beside Rorik, Kaz gasped and flinched at the mention of the Jotnar Exarch's name. The Reaver's step faltered, but only for a fraction of a second.
"Careful how you let that big mouth run, Griefer," she said. "There are some down here who might mistake your criticizing the Dungeon Lord for sedition. Never takes long for talk like that to make its way back to the boss."
Rorik glanced sidelong at the hood.
"Carried by people like his runner?"
A thoughtful quiet crept over her.
"Don't get me wrong," she said after a beat. "I like having my limbs torn off by rabid Goliath bats as much as the next troll, but it's not me I'm talking about. You can't throw a knife down here without hitting someone stealthing in the shadows."
They passed into another huge open room, this one filled with iron cages on spits over open pits of lava, many containing burnt corpses. The molten rock bubbled and hissed. All along the far wall were heavy wooden doors, their dark planks rotting and hinges rusty. The Reaver passed the first three and opened the fourth, ducking inside without waiting to see if Rorik and Kaz would follow. They found themselves in another throne room. This one, lit by troughs of flowing lava that lined each wall, and decorated with more delightful offerings from the tormented nightmares of bloodthirsty torturers. Three huge brute Thursars and one skeletal elite Reaver stood guard over the chamber, each one pierced and studded with sharp bits of rusty metal. At the far end, an over-muscled Thursar behemoth, easily twice the size of Ugaraz the Vile, overflowed a throne made of human, Olm, Elf, Rog, and Troll skulls, his body a pincushion of rusty spikes. The behemoth growled as they passed, but the hooded reaver tipped him a cheerful wave and continued on her way. Rorik's health had sunk back down below three quarters, but he waited until he and Kaz had ducked into the spiraling stone stairwell off to the side of the skull throne before downing another potion. The last thing he needed was to show weakness in a place like this. In the close quarters of the staircase, Rorik picked up the sound of Macaroni's footsteps once again. The beast had kept pace with them throughout the wide, vaulted ceilings of the last floor. Finally, as they reached the bottom of the steps, Rorik's filigreed vial flashed again and returned to red. The poison counter had finally run out. He topped off his health with one more magenta concoction, then followed the reaver into a dark stone corridor, Kaz close on his heels.
"I wouldn't," the reaver said, her voice heavy with threat. "Dungeon Lord's business."
Before Rorik could ask what she meant, a low grumbling came from a gloomy corner. He could just barely make out the shape of another reaver hunched down as if preparing to attack. Then it vanished. Black mist wafted across their path from its direction. Through the gloom, Rorik caught their guide messing with the leather wrappings on her hands again. He thought he saw a flat blade disappear into them.
"Nicely spotted," he told her with an approving nod.
A few seconds passed before she responded, and Rorik thought it was likely she'd been deciding whether he was being sarcastic. He had that effect on people sometimes. The quick ones, mostly, as they tended to be the most cagey.
"Used to be my spot," she said, shrugging one barely armored shoulder. "You can usually take down a hero or two in the bottleneck before the rest of their party realizes what's happening. Three, if you're as fast as me."
In spite of having been poisoned and pickpocketed by the hooded wench just two floors ago, Rorik found himself grinning at her boasting.
"Are you as fast on your back as you are on your feet?"
he asked, trying to strike a nerve. "Is that why Azabek chose you as his messenger?"
"I suspect it had more to do with my willingness to kill with little or no provocation,"
the reaver responded easily.
"Especially those smaller than me."
Rorik chuckled. She might be working for the despot oppressing this place, but he could appreciate a good contratempo when he heard one. At the end of the winding corridor, they stepped out into a poorly lit nave, its pillars stretching up into a cathedral ceiling painted with chipped and fading scenes that appeared divine or profane, depending on which way the pale blue witch lights wandering between the rotting and burnt wooden pews below hit them. The silence was like a heavy blanket, and even the muffled sound of their feet on the stone floors seemed to profane it. Shadows skulked around the room. Hulking Thursar behemoths and gaunt dread reavers in dark leather armor. Sitting in the chancel at the head of the nave was an armored Thursar knight on a wide, scorched wood throne. The wide rack of stag horns on her helm turned to follow them as they passed through to the carved door below. There was no staircase to be found. Instead, they navigated claustrophobic dirt tunnels interspersed with glowing infernal shrines, each one splattered with blood and several adorned with entrails. The ceilings were so low that Kaz had to stoop to follow, and even then the plumage on his antlered headdress whispered along the dirt above. Green bioluminescent fungi lined the walls, giving off just enough light to avoid the occasional pit trap and ambush set up at blind corners. Sullen dread reavers and hungry-looking elemental thursers glowered at them from shadowy alcoves, but the hooded reaver's presence seemed to be holding the would-be attackers at bay. Or rather, her connection to the Jotnar Exarch, who presided over this citadel, did. Like an infectious disease, the silence of the nave seemed to have seeped into their bodies. None of them said a word until they came to the final shrine at a wide intersection, where a dark-robed reaver shaman was presiding over a living sacrifice. The sacrificial troll, a low-level thurser, had been covered in phosphorescent infernal runes and nailed to the floor with jagged stone spikes. He screamed and thrashed, trying to break free as the shaman opened a nearby cage, releasing a ravenous hellbender, what looked to be Macaroni's much larger, much uglier cousin on him. Rorik grimaced as he tried to block out the wet sounds of tearing flesh and smacking lips. Beside him, Kaz's eyes were the size of dinner plates, and his blue skin had gone ashy gray beneath the dusting of white fur. Rorik grabbed Kaz's arm and turned the soft-hearted thirster away from the gruesome scene, pushing him after their hooded guide. But a deep, rumbling growl, followed by a gurgling bark, caught Rorik's ear before they were out of the intersection. He turned back to find the hellbender and Macaroni snarling at one another over the dying sacrifice. Macaroni had a hand hanging out of his mouth. "Come on," Rorik snapped at the stone salamander. "Let's go." Macaroni slurped down the hand, then stalked around the hellbender, growling the whole time. When Rorik was certain the little monster wasn't going to go back for seconds, he headed in the direction he'd watched the female reaver take. She was waiting for them at the mouth of the tunnel. They stepped out of the cramped passages and into a seemingly endless underground cavern. A burbling river rolled lazily past their feet, reflecting ropes of bioluminescent blue algae that hung from the cavernous ceiling hundreds of feet overhead. Rorik couldn't help but tilt back his head and stare up at the blinking strands of algae in wonder. He'd never seen anything so beautiful.
"Are we still in the Citadel?"
he asked in a whisper.
"Sort of,"
the reaver said. She pointed in the direction of the river, toward a bright blue lake.
"Go that way far enough, and you'll come to the fifth floor overseer's throne. But we're headed this way."
The reaver turned the opposite direction and led the way across a hill and through a forest of tree-sized mushrooms. Each step stirred up the strange wet grass, making it shimmer violet and emit a tinkling musical tone. Here and there, decrepit stone structures sat falling into ruin, forgotten in this underground oasis. The reaver ignored them all. Afar off, Rorik could see high-level thursers and reavers loitering alone or stalking one another, but the three of them didn't get close enough to attract any unwanted attention. After a time, they came to a sloping walkway that looked as if it grew directly from the ground and started up it. At the top lay a foreboding keep made of stone and bone, its walls slumping with age, but more like a hoary, battle-scarred old wolf on the prowl than a crumbling fortress losing the battle with time.
"Welcome to the keep,"
the reaver said with a finality that could only have meant they were looking at the sixth and final level of the Citadel. Chapter 23. Azebek the Cruel. Rather than take them in through the toothy maw of a portcullis, the reaver gestured for Rorik and Kaz to follow her around the side. Her hands flicked out with familiar ease, brushing over rocks, fingers probing for some unseen thing. After a brief moment, an audible click filled the air, and a hidden door groaned open. Without a word, she ushered them into a dark, sloping passageway. At the end of the passage, she triggered another catch. A panel slid open, revealing a throne room dancing with firelight. Piles of gold and jewels littered the chamber, and a huge ornate chest stood in one corner, burning with eldritch power. On the throne sat a colossal, gray-skinned monster with stringy white hair. Rorik had briefly seen this same creature before, during his death and respawn. The Jotnar Exarch had been hewing down a party of heroes with that long-bladed infernal scythe, the same rune-etched scythe currently resting across his lap.
"So, we have a new overseer,"
Azebek the Cruel rumbled, his voice deep and yet whistling like the howl of a tornado just before it tears a home apart. The Exarch's lightless black eyes swept over Rorik and sized up Kaz.
"A chip right off Ugaraz's block, and a level before that dimwit managed to unseat Krotz."
No, not Kaz,
the terrified Thurser stammered. His entire body was trembling so hard that it made his headdress's plumage dance like dead leaves in a stiff north wind. He pointed down at Rorik with a claw-tipped finger.
Him!
The room fell deathly quiet.
A changeling overseer?
Azabek mused, his black eyes roving over Rorik's scrawny body. There was a brutal, uncanny intelligence there that made Rorik's skin crawl.
You defeated Ugaraz.
It wasn't spoken as a question, but Rorik dipped his chin in acknowledgement. He felt as if the Exarch were looking directly into his mind and assessing the threat he posed. A level 6 changeling who hadn't evolved yet wouldn't take much of a mental leap to figure out which path he was set on following. After an infinity of scrutiny, the Exarch leaned back on his throne and cupped his leathery gray chin.
The Infernale valued ambition above all else, and blessed those who possessed it mightily,
Azabek said.
But ambition was also their downfall. Have a care to keep yours in check, little changeling, lest it treat you the same.
Rorik didn't have to fake the undercurrent of fear as he forced a tense smile and said,
I know my place.
A smile tugged at the corner of the Exarch's lips at the evasive response. Rorik had to make himself stand still and stare back into the endless black depths of Azabek's eyes. This creature was no Marikonic Ustar, but he was deadly dangerous all the same, and possessed the same entitled air as the Tyrant King. This was a creature of power and rage. Looking into his gaze, it was easy to understand how Azabek had earned his moniker.
All will go well for you if you do,
the Dungeon Lord said. Rorik flinched as Azabek lifted the infernal scythe from his lap, but the Exarch only used it to gesture at the crowd of high-level trolls gathered around the room, bedecked in various fine robes, leathers, or plate armor.
Behold, changeling, the Troll High Court. Ugaku, Reaver Champion. Verisk, Reaver Shaman. Zul, Jotnar Soul Cursed. Yarrow, Thursa Knight, Lajin, Thursa Elemental. Between them there is experience enough to bring this citadel and all of Hearthworld down around your ears.
Rorik bit his tongue before he asked them why they weren't out bringing it down then.
And every one of them is willing to unleash their might on you the moment you step out of line.
Azabek continued, standing the scythe on end at his feet as he leveled his gaze at Rorik once more.
Do we understand one another?
Better than Rorik would have liked.
Yes, Dungeon Lord.
Then let us move on to what will be expected of you. You've no doubt read through your floor and troop options.
The Exarch phrased it as a question, so Rorik nodded confirmation. Azabek waved a hand tipped with talons the size of daggers.
Your predecessor didn't care for reading, but luckily for him, he had an instinctual knowledge of the purpose dungeons like ours serve. Namely, to grind down the adventurers a little bit at a time, leading them deeper and deeper into our citadel, tempting them forward until it is far too late to turn back. It is in service to this sacred calling that strict level caps are enforced on each floor. You yourself may remain on the first floor until you reach level 13, assuming you survive that long without being deposed. Then you must migrate to the second floor and continue to grow or challenge the Overseer for control of the second floor.
Azabek paused, as if waiting for Rorik to show that he understood so far, so Rorik interjected a quick,
I see.
You're allowed an honor guard while you're Overseer,
Azabek continued.
On the first floor, this is no more than 3 creatures.
He thrust 3 enormous fingers into the air to emphasize the point.
Each one of a level with you or lower. The rest of the creatures on your floor are welcome to migrate as soon as they reach level 4, and all are required to do so at level 7. This tricks the players into a false confidence in their abilities, leading them ever downward, presenting them with new and more dangerous mobs, setting the trap.
Rorik allowed a scowl to cross his face, pretending to hurry to smooth it away. The Exarch's eyes narrowed at the expression, but a fanged smile stretched across his face.
"Yes, little changeling?"
Azabek asked, playing out just enough rope for Rorik to hang himself.
"You have an objection to the way of things, perhaps?"
"Doesn't it seem a little strange to any of you that we set up our defenses specifically to attract murderous invaders to our citadel so that they can butcher us over and over again?" Rorik asked, looking away from Azabek for the first time and addressing the Troll High Court. "As if our sole purpose in life were to suffer and die repeatedly for the entertainment of foreign invaders. None of you feel as if you've been brainwashed into pouring out your blood for these raiders who have no right to our land or our possessions? None of you think that we should be the masters of our own domain, and they should fear to tread here?"
One by one, the members of the High Court, so mighty when they were being held up as an example of what would happen if he stepped out of line, dropped their gazes or looked away.
It was like that, then.
They were no different than the rebel council back in Corvo, really.
No, they were worse.
They were the noble houses who flipped allegiances once it became clear that to fight against Merrick's invasion would be hard, exhausting, and require heavy sacrifice. They were the knights and mages who kowtowed to the tyrant king, trying to appease him with their obedience because that easy road allowed them to keep living the lives of luxury they'd always enjoyed.
"No one?"
Rorik put on the most innocent face he was capable of and turned back to Azabek.
"Never mind it, then. Me either."
The Exarch chuckled, a sound like thunder rolling through the mountains.
"Accidents have a way of befalling those who can't stop themselves from making waves, little changeling,"
Azabek said, his wicked grin bearing fangs the size of Rorik's forearm. He glanced quickly toward the Reaver who'd escorted them down.
"You won't last long down here if you don't watch that ambition."
"I won't take my eyes off it," Rorik promised.
Another eternity passed under the Exarch's cold, searching glare. After a time, Rorik began to fidget and squirm, feigning discomfort and trepidation. To Azabek, fear was an indestructible hold he couldn't fathom any creature breaking free of, because cunning as he might be, if the roles were reversed, the Exarch would never be able to break free. As long as Azabek thought fear would keep Rorik loyal, the Exarch had no reason to suspect Rorik would disobey, much less set his sights on overthrowing him. Finally, Rorik pretended to break.
"These belong to you, Dungeon Lord," Rorik said begrudgingly, bringing out the gold and the lash of the waning blood moon he'd looted from the fallen first floor overseer.
Even knowing the long-bladed scythe could separate his head from his body, Rorik couldn't bring himself to kneel to any tyrant, but he did lower his eyes to the floor as he piled the plunder at the feet of the Jotnar Exarch.
"Taken from the stinking corpse of Ugaraz the Vile."
"Under my reign, loyalty is always rewarded,"
Azabek purred. His enormous taloned hand nearly swallowed Rorik's scrawny changeling torso. Rorik risked a glance up at the Dungeon Lord.
"Rorik the Griefer, I bestow upon you the infernal blessing of the faithful servant,"
Azabek said, his malicious grin a clear indication that he knew how the epithet rankled Rorik's pride.
"Congratulations. Azabek the Cruel has given you the infernal blessing in return for paying the traditional homage to the rightful lord of the cruel citadel with your spoils of war, also known as the victor's tax. You have gained 500 experience, and all spells inscribed in the next 8 hours are 50% more powerful."
Golden light poured from Rorik's skin, and an ascending chime rang through the keep's throne room. A round of raucous cheering and the slamming of maces on shields filled the throne room as if on cue, courtesy of the Troll High Court.
"Level up! You have 10 undistributed stat points.
With a thought, Rorik dismissed the notifications. He didn't want the Jotnar Exarch out of his sight for any longer than necessary.
And here, Azavek said, as if it had only just occurred to him, a boon from the depths of my generosity.
Eyes sparkling, the dungeon lord plucked the crescent-bladed whip up from the pile of surrendered treasure and held it out to Rorik, as if he weren't offering Rorik what was already rightfully his.
Maybe you'll surprise us all and live long enough to enjoy it.
Rorik pursed his thin lips and held the whip before him in both hands, like the shackles of allegiance the gift was meant to be.
I have every intention of it, he said.
Chapter 24. Partnerships. Azabek dismissed Rorik, then nodded at the Reaver. She reopened the hidden panel and escorted them out of the keep and back up through the tunnels. A brooding silence hung over the party as they navigated the floors. The Reaver fiddled with the leather wrappings around her hands. Kaz slowly came out of his paralyzed panic at having stood before the Dungeon Lord, and Rorik calculated what it would take to depose the slimy bastard. Macaroni slithered along between Rorik and the Reaver, uncamouflaged, his bulbous head flicking around at every sound. They were nearly halfway through the second level before the Reaver broke the silence.
I suppose you think you got away with something back there, she said. Planting ideas in high places.
Rorik snorted. Those worthless sycophants. They haven't got a full brain to share between them. I'd trade the lot for one stout-hearted Kaz any day.
The Thurser beamed with pride at the vote of confidence. Rorik turned his attention back to the shadowy depths of the Reaver's hood. Or one quick and deadly Reaver with a mind of her own. Her steps faltered, and she swiveled to face him.
Who are you? What are you?
At her sudden movement, Macaroni, still positioned between Rorik and the Reaver, growled a low, gurgling threat and pulled back his gray lips to bare rows and rows of razor-sharp teeth.
Stop it, Rorik ordered the salamander.
I mean it,
the Reaver demanded, ignoring the growling beast at her feet.
You call out the Dungeon Lord's practices to his face, and then claim you were trying to sway the low-level runner who poisoned you to switch sides? You're either a terrible strategist or a very bad liar.
How long have you had to fight and scratch your way up through the levels while your own kind cut you down from within? Rorik asked.
You fight the heroes from the front, and you watch out for the friendly fire at your back,
she said, as if challenging him to prove her wrong.
That's the nature of life. Everyone knows it.
No, it's the nature of what Azabek's built, Rorik said. He fosters the atmosphere of internal competition and paranoia, so no one will band together and overthrow him. But it doesn't have to be that way.
The Reaver snorted and spun on her heel, stalking down the hall, her steps as silent as the grave. Rorik and Kaz hurried to follow, Macaroni keeping pace with them, tail twitching warily. They came out of the corridor into the second floor's huge torture chamber. Rather than leading them to the stairs, however, the Reaver took a sharp left and halted beside the cart stacked high with body parts.
Do you see this?
She pointed at the pile of decaying limbs awaiting disposal in the furnace.
This is what becomes of trolls who talk like you do. And worse. You'd be surprised how much screaming is still left in a body once its arms and legs come off. How long it takes to roast alive over a lava pit or bleed to death on a rocking cradle. Longer if Azabek has a shaman heal you up so the torturers can start again. Look around you, she said, her voice harsh. Is this what you want?
As if her words had opened his eyes, Rorik suddenly realized that the majority of the skeletons and rotting corpses in the cages lining the room or strapped to the tables were missing their limbs. But beneath the Reaver's grim tone, there was a desperation burning, defying him to give her a reason to believe some other fate were possible. Before Rorik could respond, however, Kaz took a quick step forward, one clawed finger raised as if he were about to make a counterpoint. A trio of flat-bladed knives appeared in the Reaver's fingers, their edges oily with poison. Macaroni lunged, and only Kaz's quick reflexes and thick tree-trunk arms stopped the salamander from taking a bite out of the Reaver's leg. The beast squirmed and fought to break free of the Thurser's grasp.
Macaroni, stop! Rorik snapped. She's not going to hurt anyone.
When the gurgling, growling, and barking didn't stop, Rorik glared at the Reaver meaningfully. After a moment, the knives disappeared back into her leather wrappings. Macaroni quieted, and Kaz set the beast down.
Kaz used to think the same way,
the soft-hearted Thurser said to the Reaver, still watching the salamander out of the corner of his eye.
That there could be no change, and that life was only fighting and death and respawn. But Rorik helped Kaz level up and evolve. Kaz is a Thurser because of Rorik. Rorik showed Kaz that working together, we don't have to stay mindless dungeon mobs trampled under the hero's feet.
He dropped his voice to a conspiratorial whisper.
The heroes, all the overseers, we can do anything, become the masters of our own destiny, even learn to cook food.
The Reaver's hood swiveled from the earnest Thurser to Rorik.
I would have phrased it a bit differently, Rorik said with a shrug, but essentially he's right. None of the lies you've been told about what you can and can't do are true. I'm proof of that.
On impulse, he pulled the world stone out of his leather armor.
If you're tired of living under the thumb of that self-important tyrant while you watch your back for friendly fire, there's a place for you in my honor guard.
From the shadows of the hood, Rorik felt keen eyes studying his face and the amber pendant dangling from his fist.
How do you know I won't go running back to betray you as soon as I say yes?
She asked.
I don't.
But he could tell a rebel when he met one.
But the fact that I'm trusting you not to is evidence enough that trolls don't have to sabotage and fight one another, isn't it?
Or it's evidence that you're soft in the head,
she replied, her tone shifting back to its accustomed cynical bite.
But then, I must be too, if I'm considering this.
She crossed her arms, sighed.
Fine. You only die 10,000 times. One of them might as well be for something.
Rorik reached out to take her by the shoulder, but she grabbed his wrist and held it fast, her grip like iron.
Easy, he said, opening his hands to show he meant no threat. I have to touch you to trigger my soul forge ability.
And I have to make sure you don't have some poisoned payback in those hands, she said, twisting his palms toward the firelight and inspecting them thoroughly. Occupational hazard. You understand?
Rorik nodded. Once the Reaver had satisfied herself that he wasn't trying to poison her, Rorik placed his hand on her shoulder and triggered Soulforge. Current World Stone Authority, Greater Vassal, 2 of 3. Use Soulforge, yes or no? Rorik selected yes. The pendant burned ice cold, even through his leather armor, and the cloudy stone at its center shone with amber brilliance. The same bright amber light seeped from beneath his hand. When he released the Reaver's shoulder, the handprint remained. He stared at it for a moment, fascinated by the way it contrasted with her midnight blue skin. The nameplate floating over her hood changed from Reaver to Zira, and before Rorik's eyes, a notice appeared. Zira has become your greater vassal. The mystic grimoire opened itself to the followers page, and he glanced over Zira's statistics. Reaver Overview. Name, Zira. Level, 6. Type, Reaver. Current Infernali points, 1,250. Next level, 3,840. Attributes, Health, 108. HP regen per 5 seconds, 14. Weapon damage, 10. Attack damage, 93. Base armor, 10. Armor rating, 68. Movement rate, speed of opponent. Critical hit chance, 12%. Critical hit damage, plus 75%. Special skills. Rapid regen. 50% resistance against normal weapons. Shadow stalker and smokescreen. Poisoner. As he closed out of the grimoire, the glowing mark on Zira's shoulder faded to invisibility.
That's it?
She asked.
That's it, Rorik said, as if it were a small matter, though in truth, his stomach was churning with excitement.
He'd taken the first floor overseer position. He was leveling quickly, and he was assembling a solid team to take over the Citadel. He'd see this coup through yet, and get home to finish off that bastard Merrick.
Then in my first act as part of your honor guard, I'd like to say that you're a fool if you think Azabek doesn't know what you're doing,
Zira said. The four of them resumed the trek across the torture chamber toward the stairs. He definitely suspects, Rorik said, thinking back to the uncanny intelligence in the Exarch's stare and his emphasis on keeping ambition in check. But without an open challenge, he can't kill me forever, can he?
No, but he can kill you before you reach the level cap for Jotnar, dropping you back to level one, she said. And the smartest way for him to do that would be to plant an assassin as close to you as possible, say, in your honor guard.
Rorik smirked. Or he could just give his runner the nod to snuff me out on the way back to my floor.
You were paying attention then,
she said, equal parts statement and question. We could have found our way back without a guide, Rorik said, shrugging. Any reason you chose not to? To murder me?
Any reason you waited to confront me about it until now?
I wanted to give you the chance not to. The hood shook side to side.
That kind of thinking will get you killed.
Not now that I have an assassin in my honor guard to point it out to me, Rorik said. Zira laughed, the musical sound utterly out of place in the gory, stinking torture chamber.
You definitely have the cunning of a Jotnar, she said. I hope you make it to level 8.
With that, she slipped through the arched doorway to the shadowy stairs. Rorik watched her go. A long black claw tapped Rorik on the shoulder. Kaz was looking down at him.
Kaz would not have let her kill Rorik, the Thursar insisted. Kaz would have snapped her in half.
I know, mate. He clapped Kaz on his huge arm. Though I suspect you would have had to fight Macaroni for the pleasure. Rorik turned and jogged up the stairs. Zira had stopped at the top, just inside the first floor throne room. When Rorik reached the top step, her hood turned to regard him. Then she stepped aside silently. Every one of the throne room Thursars had been slaughtered and completely dismembered. Their body parts littered the floor, mixed in with tapestries and spiked heads torn from the walls. The glowing stained glass windows were shattered, and colorful shards littered the floor below. Scrawled across the wall in thick troll blood was a message. Poner Boner OG was here. No one griefs me, dickface. Prepare for a world of hurt. I'm coming back for you, and I'm gonna camp this level like I camped your mom. Rorik the Griefer will pay.
Friend of yours?
Zira asked. Rorik's fists shook at his sides, sharp changeling claws biting into his leathery palms. He stalked to the twisted obsidian throne and sat. In response to his thoughts, the Overseer's grimoire opened to troop management. The simple floor map at the bottom of the page showed only corpses. The roster confirmed it. Out of all the creatures on the first floor, only he, Kaz, Zira, and Macaroni were still alive. Level 1, Overseer Roster. Type, Changelings. Level 1. Number, 25. Status, Deceased/respawning, all. Thursars, level 4, number 5, status, deceased/respawning, all. Thursar, Kazko, level 5, number 1, status, alive. Reaver, Zira, level 6, number 1, status, alive. Stone Salamander, level 1, number 10, deceased/respawning, all. Stone Salamander, Mac, level 4, number 1, status, alive. Elite Salamanders, level 6, number 1, status, deceased/respawning, all. Reaver Bats, level 1, number 10, status, deceased/respawning, all. Elite Reaver Bats, level 6, number 1, status, deceased/respawning, all.
Ponerboner 007 and his band had come through and decimated them. Rorik glared at the letters splashed across the wall, but he was really seeing Corvo, its sewers running with blood, its colorful homes and buildings burning while the Tyrant King looked on. He couldn't help but wonder if Merrick had razed the city to the ground after Rorik escaped him, just as Ponerboner 007 had done here. Were the heads of the whole Tversit rotting on pikes outside a burnt-out ruin by now? Rorik turned to the floor design page. He had an hour before the trolls and other creatures respawned, and he didn't intend to waste it. Ponerboner 007 was going to regret ever having set foot on his floor. Chapter 25, Death Trap. The first thing Rorik did was tweak the layout of the floor. With only 100 points to distribute, inefficiency needed to go. Every space, every hallway, every blind corner needed a purpose. He added a smaller antechamber and moved the great room where the changelings and reaver bats usually grouped off a bit so they would have some warning when raiders came. Then he repurposed a few smaller corridors that branched off from the main passageway, only to reconnect a few yards later. He simply erased their reconnection points, creating dead ends where he set spring-loaded spears to stab out of the walls from both directions. Next, he went through the level, disposing of several useless rooms, including the stone salamander nest and the cell where he and Kaz had first fought Ponerboner 007's party, and reinvesting those points into traps. Chests that exploded in deadly firebombs or nasty clouds of plague vapor. Enormous falling chandeliers, hails of poisoned darts, spiked grates that snapped shut against walls like standing blackthorn beds. True, the dungeon level would be smaller, but every inch of the space would be far deadlier, quality over quantity. While he worked, Rorik heard footsteps around the throne room, things scraping on stone, and Kaz and Zira speaking in hushed tones. At some point, Macaroni jammed himself between Rorik and the back of the throne and curled up, snoring softly. Rorik paid none of them any mind. All of his focus was absorbed in creating the perfect death trap of a dungeon. There was a small part of Rorik that wanted to spend all the floor's building points on deadly traps, envisioning Ponerboner 007 furiously cursing his name as the hero died in every single one. But Rorik knew he needed to think longer term. The traps were expensive, and, excepting the spiked grates, which automatically reset themselves after springing, could only be used once per battle. Weapons and armor, on the other hand, would benefit his troops and help them kill as many heroes as they pleased, not to mention help them level up. So, Rorik invested a whopping 10 points in a smithy, placing it near enough to the throne room that it would be handy. An arcane workshop would have been an ideal complement, but he wasn't willing to spend another 10 points on the whole room when he could toss an enchanter's table into the smithy for a mere 2 points. He also added on a tanning rack for another 2 points, allowing him to work on leather armor. That left him with a handful of points to pour into the decrepit library, adding new shelves, a cartographer's desk, and an enormous hanging map of Hearthworld. It seemed like a solid, defensible layout, plenty of ambush points, but it also interconnected enough that his troops could escape from the heroes if they needed to. Rorik was about to accept the changes when Kaz's voice somehow broke through his focus.
"And then we ate food. Not ale. Food! Zira can't imagine the wonders of food. It warms the belly, filling the nose and mouth with flavors and smells so delicious. Rorik promised to find Kaz a cook fire, and when he does, Kaz will make a stew. Kaz has read all about stew. It is meat cooked in a pot with vegetables and water. A true innovation."
Cursing under his breath, Rorik examined the floor map. Traps, smithy, library, but no kitchen. According to the list of options, cook fires weren't available outside of kitchens. He could leave it out for now and swear to Kaz that he would add one later when there was more time and less pressure.
But when would that ever be the case?
The pressure never came off in a war, not truly.
Besides, they would need to eat.
Armies needed food as surely as weapons and armor, and escaping to the marketplace whenever they required a meal hardly seemed practical. Rorik scratched the back of his neck and grudgingly inspected the layout of traps again, playing with points values in his head. If he got rid of one spring-loaded spear trap here, and that plague cloud chest, he'd have to sacrifice the falling chandelier there, but that could easily be made up for by stationing a few stone salamanders on the ceiling instead. A bit of finagling later, he had enough points for a proper kitchen. He added it in the far corner of the level near the Great Hall, so Kaz could introduce the changelings who gathered there to the miracle of food. Maybe even help keep the little lushes sober enough to defend the place by balancing out their ale consumption. A prompt appeared. You have changed the floor layout of the Cruel Citadel, Level 1. Changes will take place immediately, but no further changes can be made for 24 hours. Are you sure you wish to proceed? Alter the Cruel Citadel Level 1, yes or no? Satisfied, Rorik accepted the changes to the floor, then turned to troop management and began rewriting the scripted actions for each of the different categories of creatures. He adjusted the changelings so that rather than running at attackers separately, relying on their teeth and claws against well-armed and armored heroes, they would attack together in groups of three or more. Likewise, he set the reaver bats to harry the heroes from above, and the stone salamanders to use their camouflage to get close enough for surprise attacks. If Zira's wariness was any indication, it would take some training to get all of them trusting each other enough to work together, but Rorik was certain the time spent would be well worth the payoff when the first wave of heroes marched through. He accepted those changes as well, then closed the Overseer's grimoire and stood up from the twisted obsidian throne. Across the room, Kaz was scrubbing at Ponerboner 007's message with a fistful of torn tapestry, smearing the troll blood around but failing to obscure the words. To his right, Zira was throwing troll heads on broken spikes and dismembered bits of Thursar down the stairs to the second floor. The ransacked chamber was very nearly back to normal, minus the row of staring heads. They must have been cleaning the entire time he was working. The Reaver was the first to notice that Rorik was no longer absorbed in his grimoire. She kicked the remaining pile of Thursar chunks down the stairs and clapped her hands together as if dusting them off.
Done with your rage reading, then?
She asked.
I am, Rorik said, unable to suppress a cockeyed smile. Would the two of you like to see what it accomplished?
Kaz is almost finished.
The Thursar attacked the G in Poner Boner OG furiously.
Just a few more letters to go.
Rorik eyed the still mostly intact message.
Later, Kaz. I want your opinion on some of the changes I made.
He led the two of them out of the throne room and through the newer, deadlier corridors, Macaroni following close by as Rorik showed them the hidden tripwires and triggers and explained how each trap worked. Naturally, Zira caught onto these quickly and began suggesting ideal placements for more.
This is as many as I'm allowed to install through the Overseer's throne, Rorik said. But there's no limit to how many we can improvise from materials around the level.
Like Rorik and Kaz did with the pieces of the torture chamber,
Kaz said brightly, his big eyes shining with enthusiasm. The Reaver clicked her tongue, annoyed.
Would have been nice to know that before I tossed all those heads down the stairs,
she sighed.
Now I'll have to make a special trip to drag them back up. And we'll need something else to slow down anyone Azabek might send up from below.
Rorik was curious what sort of trap she could fashion out of a baker's dozen rotting heads, but Zira didn't elaborate. He decided to leave it a surprise. Their next stop was the smithy. The room hotter than hell's and cast in flickering red firelight. Rorik filled his lungs with the smell of hot metal, a swirl of memories bringing a smile to his face, then set about laying out his plans for arming the first floor's troops. Both of his vocal greater vassals agreed that smithing weapons was a good idea, but neither seemed terribly interested in the process or the individual components of the operation, so Rorik left a closer inspection for later when he could do it alone. From the smithy, they went to the improved library. The new shelves were set up perpendicular to the old ones, adding scores of books as well as convenient hiding places for ambushes. Rorik's hands itched to search the pages of the new tomes, but he forced himself to be satisfied for the time being with running his fingers over their spines as he led Kaz to the cartography.